Diabetes costs the United States $413 billion a year. What if we could take a pill, lose the weight, then put all that diabetes money into the bank? That thought leads us to ask, are GLP-1s too good to be true?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,424th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, it is a very big number. 42.7% of those of us who live in the United States are obese. And that very big number grows because there is a very strong correlation between one's body mass index and one's propensity to develop diabetes. According to the Center for Disease Control, the total estimated cost of diagnosed diabetes was $640 billion a year in medical costs and lost productivity. That's nearly two-thirds of $1 trillion a year. Gone. Then in 2005, GLP-1s hit the market, and the weight began peeling off the body politic. The cost for this prescription medication starts at around $39 per month, which, given the cost of diabetes, would seem to be a very good deal. But then the hair started falling out. The muscles weakened. The gut complained. Given the strange side effects, some began to ask, are GLP-1s too good to be true? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have trichologist Dr. Keith Kantor, author of What Matters. Welcome to the Food Chain, Dr. Keith.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good. Well, you're down there in Atlanta?
Yep.
Toasty down there?
Yeah, well, today's only 90.
Okay, good. Well, you have a PhD in nutritional science, a doctorate in naturopathic medicine, and you're the author of What Matters. Well, what does matter?
Well, talking about the GLP-1s, obesity obviously is a huge problem, and it coincides with diabetes. They came out with the GLP-1 drugs, which hit America by storm. I don't know the exact number, but well over 10% of adults are taking that medicine now. And it works.
And it works.
And the weight's falling off. It's actually working enough now that they don't think obesity this year is going to rise. It's going to be level.
For the first time.
For the first time, probably, yeah, since they've been keeping records. Well, so it's obviously doing something right. The problem is it does have some side effects. Now, really nothing bad, you know, like if you listen to those commercials on different things on TV, you listen to the side effects and you're shaking your head, oh my God, I'd never take, but it doesn't have side effects like that. But one of the side effects people report is they start losing hair.
Mm-hmm. And so, you're a trichologist, which is?
That's correct. That's just a hair doctor, basically.
Mm-hmm. And the hair is a pretty good indicator of one's body.
Well, hair is the fastest growing cells or among the fastest growing cells in the body. So when different things affect you, it's very often that you'll notice it in your hair first.
Mm-hmm.
So let me explain a myth first. The GLP-1 drugs themselves, the chemical analysis of the drugs, they do not affect hair. There's nothing in those that has a direct effect on the hair. What happens is it causes stress in the body, which it's supposed to. What it's doing in layman's terms is it's tricking the body to think it's not hungry. The body goes into starvation mode. When the body goes into starvation mode, it causes stress. In a human, when you have stress, that's called the fight or flight reaction. When you have that, the body is going back to prehistoric times and saying, I either have to fight or run from the saber-toothed tiger. But what it really decides is, I don't need hair to fight or run from a saber-toothed tiger. So I'm going to take those nutrients that are left because the body thinks it's starving because the GLP drugs or one drugs are working and letting us feel not hungry and insane. I'm going to divert those nutrients away from the hair, which I don't need, and move it to the lungs, to the heart, to the arms, to the legs, because I don't need hair to fight or to run for that matter. And that's what happens. So when we go in, when we feel stress, we're making the hair less resilient, and then it becomes more susceptible to what actually shrinks the hair, which is DHT, which is dihydrotestosterone. So that's always the bullet. But the trigger is stress. And what in this case is triggering the stress is the GLP-1 drugs tricking the body into thinking it's not hungry and thinking it's in starvation mode.
So, in other words, there is nothing in the GLP-1 that would have a direct impact on one's hair.
That's correct.
However, what the GLP-1s do is scare the bleep out of your body so that the stress induced in the fright robs the hair of the essential nutrients it needs.
It diverts it, not enough to kill the hair itself, but enough to make it more susceptible to the DHT, which we all have, and some of us are more susceptible or less. We're susceptible because of things like heredity, genetics will do it. If your parents and grandparents are bald, you're more susceptible. Stress will do it. A really poor diet will do it. But the way even that does it is by causing stress. So stress is induces the
Okay.
hair to be less resilient and more susceptible to the DHT.
So when it comes to the question of hair, no, it doesn't have a direct impact on hair, but yes, it does have a direct impact on hair.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Well, I just wanted to explain that it's not the chemicals
Right.
in the GLP-1. It's the fact that it causes stress, which it's supposed to,
Yeah.
by tricking the body to think it's not hungry. And the body's reaction to that is going into starvation mode and deciding where to put the nutrients.
Well, as a side, parenthetical, I guess, do the other stresses in our world also have an impact on the growth of
Yes.
hair?
Yes. If you go through any type of sickness, in almost all cases, it's not the sickness that's causing you to lose hair, but it causes stress. And the way your body reacts is by diverting nutrients to what it feels is more essential for survival. And then the hair is less resilient, and then it's more susceptible to DHT, which is dihydrotestosterone, which literally shrinks the hair.
So there it is. It's not just GLP-1s that are causing the hair loss in
No,
America. It's
stress
all
in
the other
general,
stress that
though.
we have too.
Oh yeah,
Well,
money stress,
yeah, everything.
children, spouses, work, all those type of things.
Yeah. Lots of reasons for fear and flight.
That's
Well,
right.
as a professional and as a student of nutritional science and I'm curious what you thought when GLP-1s dropped as an observer and as a student of the human body. What did
Well,
you think when they
when I
first came
first
in?
heard of them, I said, if that works, that would be miraculous. And it does work, and it's working so well that it's literally having an effect on the obesity rate, which will, if it didn't already, will have an effect on the diabetes rate. Because some people take it not even to lose weight, They take it to help control the diabetes.
So your first question then was the same as my question. Are GLP-1s too good to be true?
No, they're not too good to be true. It's just a fancy form of appetite suppressant that works, and it's not that expensive. $39 a month is really good. I heard of more like $100 to $200 a month. Some insurance covers it also, but that's any of those prices are really cheap compared to diabetes medicine.
Well, that's what my thought is that this is really incredible. If this is reducing our obesity rate, which is simply out of this world, if it can reduce the obesity rate, it will reduce the diabetes rate.
That's correct.
And
And I've read several articles, medical type articles, that said that it's the obesity rate because of the huge amount of use of the GLP-1 drugs is now flat. And it's been going up like almost a straight line for
right.
years. So that's huge, and it's only been popular really the last 5 years or so, even though it was invented like 20 years ago.
What made it so popular, I think, probably was the amount of advertising being done.
That's it. Plus it works and people
Plus, it
see it
works.
and people say, "What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm taking the GLP," and the doctors give it out like candy.
Do doctors have a fear of it at all? Or is this, we're just there, right? Aren't we?
If you think of it from a MD doctor's point of view, and if they really had to make a choice between losing weight, making your chances of diabetes less, or you're losing some hair, they're going to choose the weight and the diabetes all the time. And I don't blame them.
From what you have seen, and a lot of other people have seen, this is the real deal, the
Yes, it's
GLP-1s.
the real deal. And what I do in my practice is it's a twofold for e easy math process. One, I have to lower the hair loss. And that's easy. I just use topical DLT blockers. Even if you're taking the GLP-1 drugs, it'll lower the hair loss. Won't stop it, but it'll lower it. And then I use stem cells to grow the hair. And as long as there's hair follicles there, I could grow the hair literally 100% of the time. When
Wow.
you're shiny bald and all the hair follicles are dead or dormant, then
Those
it's
are some.
50, 60% of the time. But when the hair follicles are there, which they are 99, not that, 95% of the time, I could grow the hair.
Okay,
Or I should
ladies and
say,
gentlemen,
stem cells could grow the hair.
we're going to take a quick break, but hey, this is getting really exciting. We're talking about GLP-1s and the good they appear to be doing to the world, and it's not just diabetes, but there's a bunch of other things as well. But ever being ever the skeptic, we're going to continue our pursuit for finding something wrong with GLP-1s with Dr. Keith Cantor, trichologist, and you. Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these very important messages.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Oldson.
What if we could take a pill and lose all of this weight that we put on over the years? And ladies and gentlemen, we have put a lot of weight on. According to the CDC, so many, 42.7% of us that live in the United States have become obese. And we've become obese by eating the wrong foods. Dr. Keith Cantor, you studied a lot of nutrition. What kind of bad foods are we doing, eating, that are causing all of this obesity?
The largest addiction in the United States is not fentanyl or heroin or cocaine. The largest addiction probably in the world, but definitely in the United States, is sugar.
In all of its forms?
In all of its forms. It's sugar. We're addicted to sugar. I don't remember the exact figures because I didn't know you were going to do it for this program. But we used to use so many pounds of sugar a year. It's went up 20-fold.
Because it's, you know, in all of the processed,
it's in everything,
food that we eat. Yes. So if you put a lot of sugar in your food product and put it in a fancy plastic bag, people still love that taste and buy
right.
more of it.
And all the carbohydrates that we have that we like, all the different chips and things that it breaks down to sugar. Carbohydrate is just, you know, instead of a single sugar, it's just a few of them put together.
Yeah.
So it's in everything, and that's where our body gets the energy from. If you have more energy, more calories, which is energy, really, then you burn, you gain weight. We store it as fat, and that's what we do.
And then the relationship between obesity or weight and diabetes is what? What is the connection there?
Well, what happened when you have excess weight, it's putting strain on the body. It's putting strain on your knees. It's doing all that. But what it also does is you have excess sugar.
Uh-huh.
Insulin is really supposed to help eliminate the sugar. And what happens because of the way we eat and our lifestyle is we develop, and insulin is produced normally in our body. But what we do is we develop insulin resistance, is what they call it, where the insulin can't break down and get rid of all the excess sugar. So then we store it as fat. So then you have too much sugar, which is bad from you. And, you know, they're always checking the sugar. It's supposed to be 100, and almost everybody's near or over the 100. And some people, the numbers are astronomical. And then they have to take insulin if they get it bad. Otherwise, they do other things for them, like the GLP-1 drugs, to try to get it down without insulin.
And then when the GLP-1s came on the market in 2005, that's 20 years ago, kind of grew slowly, and then people started taking them and they found them to work, and then it's just boom, we have an avalanche.
It was very expensive at the beginning. It was, quote, experimental at the beginning. But as the use increased, the price went down. Like you said, a price I didn't even hear before, $39. It was only by injection from the doctor. Now they have it where you could inject yourself if you want. And now they have it in pill form.
And you've seen this progression in TV ads quite rapidly here recently. So a little pill, you don't have to take the shot anymore. What a good deal. But the upshot of this is, from your perspective and from so many other people, is that this really is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And even when the people are on it, I don't tell them to stop. I tell them they might take a little longer. They definitely have to use the DHT blockers. I use 3 at one time to lower the hair loss. But even with the GLP-1 drugs, stem cells, which I get from the umbilical cord of women that are having cesarean births, will grow hair. And the expression I use is, if it can make rotten kids, it can make hair. And that's what where our kids come from is from the stem cells.
Sure. That's where our protection comes from.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, as you, have you seen an incredible increase in the number of people coming to you for hair loss because of GLP-1s?
Yeah, well, that's always, not always, but yes, I've seen it increase dramatically as at least part of the reason. Let's put it this way. I've seen it increase enough where I have a space on the intake form to say whether or not they're taking GLP-1 drugs.
Wow. Okay. So it's an indicator then.
Yeah.
And then people come to you and say, yes, I'm taking GLP-1s and my hair is falling out. What's wrong with me?
And I explain it to them, and the question I always get is, could I don't want to stop taking the GLP-1 drugs because as soon as I do, I gain the weight back. Could I still grow the hair? And I tell them the truth. Yes, it might take a little longer. It might be a little slower because, you're fighting against it. But yeah, stem cells will win out all the time. It's just, will it work within, 3 months you'll see peach fuzz, 6 months you'll start seeing some decent growth, a year you'll see it full. In your case, will you be a few months behind because, they're fighting, against the current? But it works. And I just tell them the truth.
So the nutrients that the body prevents hair from obtaining in cases of high stress, do those nutrient deficiencies also have an impact on other parts of the body, most notably muscles?
Protein is really what affects muscles the most. Will that affect it? Not really, not much. The GLP-1 drugs won't do it. It'll lose the fat mostly. You may lose a little muscle because you're not eating enough. And
Right.
then I would just tell the people try to have more
Protein.
protein. So the muscles isn't a big problem. But to answer your question, what it's doing is you have to remember the body's in survival mode because of the stress, and it's making a decision to survive. Do I need nutrients going to the hair? It'll still send some, but do I need as much as normally goes there? Or would it be smarter for me based on survival or fight or flight, whatever you want to call, to transfer or divert those nutrients to the heart, to the lungs, to the arms, to the legs? And that's what it does.
And what about other bodily functions? Like I was thinking of the gut and what we're doing to the gut, right? It's pretty strange. So does it have an impact on the digestive tract?
Not really. It's the same thing that stress will have. We have more cortisol, but no, the gut usually won't be affected by it.
Okay, I saw up in scrolling through the searching GLP-1s, I see mention made of pancreatitis.
I don't
What?
know enough to a
Okay.
answer that, but I haven't seen that, and I see literally thousands of people. I haven't s
You haven't
seen
seen
anybody
that.
that had the GLP-1 drugs and it was causing other problems.
Okay. Well, we're looking for something here.
Yeah.
We're looking. Now, one other mention I saw was an indication of 37 to 68% higher alopecia risk than other diabetes meds.
Okay, alopecia in general is an autoimmune disease. The what I use will not cure alopecia, but that's not the real question. The question is, can you grow hair if you have alopecia? And the answer is yes. As a matter of fact, I specialize in that. There's one thing we can't do. Some types of alopecia, one called CCCA, and even alopecia areata, sometimes you get scar tissue in different spots. And I can't grow hair, well, stem cells can't grow hair on top of the scar tissue. But that is such a small percentage of the head. I saw two people today with alopecia, and I didn't see any scar tissue. So I could grow hair in all the places where there's hair follicles. I can't do it on top of the scar tissue, but it has to be, in my practice, less than 1% of the area is covered by scar tissue. And then you could do the old trick. As long as I could grow the hair everywhere else, you go like this, and they can't notice it, you know, because it's so small. So,
So as long as you don't have a shiny chrome dome, you can grow hair.
even with a shiny chrome dome, you could grow hair, but if it's just a very, very light and thin, it's 100% that stem cells will grow more hair.
Wow.
If it's shiny, bald, and the hair follicles are dormant, then I tell the people I have a 50, maybe 60% chance of growing the hair. That's a big difference.
Let's turn to diet if we can. And we did make mention of the foods that lead us to obesity. What do you counsel your patients on eating now that they're on GLP-1s?
Just a good, regular, healthy diet. A decent amount of protein. You still need healthy fats. You still need a small amount of healthy complex carbohydrates. A lot of that is in the form of fiber. A Mediterranean diet is very good. Lots of protein. A keto type diet is very healthy for you, and you'll get all your nutrients. For alopecia, I actually send them to one of my nurse practitioners to get them vitamin D, zinc, and fish oil. And then you actually use that red light hat, you know, the hat with the
Right,
ultraviolet light,
red
and
lights.
use it to stir the blood up for alopecia. And those things I do on top of the others. But do
Okay.
you think almost everybody in the United States is short on vitamin D and magnesium as a thing. In this case, it's a zinc. You'll see a lot of people short, not really of iron, but of ferritin, which is a type of iron, you know, when it's affecting the hair. But a balanced diet should do that.
When people are on GLP-1s, do they crave? Do they have cravings like just got to eat the whole bag of cookies?
I think it makes you less hungry. You eat less. Now, I'm not saying you eat better, and I'd have to, you know, you'd have to ask somebody who's on the GLP-1s if you crave you know, sugar and things like that. But overall, you eat less. And if you eat less overall, you should take less calories in overall, which will help with the weight and the diabetes. And I haven't heard people say that even though they're eating less, they're eating all sugar. People haven't said that to me. They're just eating overall
Okay,
less.
so they're not really focused on avoiding simple carbohydrates and sugar and potato chips and things
Yeah.
that.
They should be anyhow,
Right.
but I don't think it does that. I think it just makes you overall less hungry. No
Right.
matter how they want to twist it or turn it with the fancy science, it's a fancy appetite suppressant.
And this incidentally, I've read accounts by restaurants who are they're running into people who don't eat as much anymore and are seeking smaller sized helping.
Portions.
Maybe they'll have Ozempic plates or something like that, or really small.
Well, they put the calories on now, you know, for all
Right,
the
right.
meals, and they usually have different choices.
So you can make your choice. Yeah, there you go. So we don't see anything wrong with taking GLP-1s with respect to some kind of long-term impact that it might have on the body. There's nothing's
Haven't
turned
seen
up yet.
anything negative. I just read an article, or really, I just briefed at the thing, and it said, do GLP-1s affect our brain? I didn't go through the rest of the article, but I think what it means is, do you get used to eating less? You know, is it fooled by the fact that you're not hungry, on a long-term basis, whatever mechanism it uses for that. But you know what? I'm sure there's people out there, but I haven't met too many of them where not eating enough and being too skinny is a problem. I know they're out there, but
Yeah.
they don't hang out with me and my friends anyhow.
So we're looking at a change made possible by a prescription medication. Will it ever become a non-prescription medication? If it's so it's so safe, why not?
I think when it's with those pills, right now it's still a prescription. But if they're allowed to send you the needles to do yourself, that has to be a step towards non-prescription.
Right. And then they will become commonplace and they will become a part of our daily diet.
Yeah, and then we'll abuse it and they'll put the restrictions back, and it's that vicious cycle.
There it is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, I'd like to ask the good doctor about the behavior of his patients and what happens to their body as their body starts going through a change. Wherein they're losing all of this weight. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host today. We're Dr. Keith Kantor, trichologist, the hair guy. He puts hair back on your head. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's KNOX gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale at Guam, 15 August 1945.
When word came through that the war had ended, everyone went wild. We made noise with whatever we could get our hands on. Sirens shrieked, bells rang, horns bellowed, sailors whooped and hollered. I was the wildest of all because when I first went in the Navy, I read you had to do everything you could to keep your head and nerves together so you could survive to the end. Well, I held myself together almost 4 years aboard that tin can, and I made it through to the end. Yes, I celebrated. I whooped and I hollered and I banged on metal. You bet I did. And I celebrated a bunch for all those guys that couldn't, too.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
What happens, ladies and gentlemen, when you take the little white pill or stick yourself with a needle and you start seeing the weight peeling off? What is the body's reaction to this? Must be very interesting. Let's ask trichologist Dr. Keith Cantor, whose patients come by him with this issue probably quite frequently. What happens, doctor?
So far, all I've seen is positive results. The people tell me they feel better, they have more energy, they want to grow their hair, but they do not want to stop the GLP-1 drugs.
Okay. So, and as we made mention, it's not the GLP-1s that cause a direct impact on the hair. It's the impact of the GLP-1s on the body's notion that it needs to conserve energy, I guess it is.
Well, it's tricking the body into thinking it's not hungry. So the body takes that and goes into basically starvation mode, and it starts rationing the nutrients that it has. And hair is one of the quickest growing cells in the body. So it'll divert it away from there based on survival and say, you know what? I'm not going to send as much to the hair. I'm going to send it to the heart, to the lungs, to the arms, to the legs, etc. Because, you know, for the fight or flight mode or starvation mode, you don't need hair to survive.
There you go. Now, what happens then with other drugs? If you're taking, for example, heroin or something, you take a few doses and then you got to take more. You have to keep increasing the amount of drug that you take. Is there the same relationship
with the GLP-1 drugs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have to keep taking more?
Yeah, I have heard of it going up, you know, the doses, but very controlled. And I think what they do is they start off with a very small dose, and then as they see you could tolerate it, the doctors will increase it for your body. But I don't think it's that your body is craving it. It's a different type of thing. What happens with drugs and alcohol is it affects the opiate receptors that we all have in our body.
Right.
And that goes through to the middle brain. And it's the pleasure center. And what drugs and alcohol do is they, for layman's terms, it changes the pleasure center into the survival center, where we think we need that pleasure to survive. And that's why people on certain drugs will go crazy, you know, steal and do all sorts
of. Right. With respect to the GLP-1s, then you see your patients needing an ever increasing amount of it?
Not ever increasing, but I've seen them go from, and I don't know the doses, that they start off at one dose, a low dose, say 0.5 of whatever it is. And then when they, after a month or so, they see you could tolerate it, they'll say you want to increase it to 0.7 or 0.75 and then to 1.0, and they'll increase as you could tolerate it. But it's not because you're craving it. It's because they know it'll be more effective for the body as long as your body
can tolerate it. I will eat less if I take more.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, once you get to an ideal weight, do you have patients that want to take less?
Well, I don't give the GLP-1 drugs, but I have patients that stop, and then you hope they get into that over that time they got into the habit of eating less. Most of the people that take it start working out, so they get into a more healthy lifestyle, and then they could do it. But I had at least two people last week that told me they did it. They lost over 50 pounds. They stopped. They gained the 50 pounds back in half the time. And they started taking it again.
So, well, it worked and it continues to work. And I don't work myself. So we'll have to rely on the GLP-1s to do the job.
Yeah.
Now, what about the physical impacts of losing all of this weight? Now, if I lose 50 pounds, going to change how you look.
Well, first of all, they usually don't lose it extremely quick.
Quickly.
You know, most of the things I saw are, you know, maybe a pound a week, 2 pounds a week is a lot. And that's excellent for the body.
So your body can
accommodate. Handle that easy, yeah.
And I've heard a lot about Ozempic face. What is that?
I was thinking that you could see me. I'm sorry, I was making a face.
Okay.
I don't really know what it is, but I heard the same thing. I'm assuming it's like a serious face.
Well, I mean, where your body loses a lot of its fat and you have more skin.
Oh, it makes your skin loose, you think?
Yeah, it makes your skin loose. And I guess you causes the sales of Botox to go up, you know, who knows what.
I haven't seen it much where the skin gets loose. You have to be really obese for that to happen, where you lose the fat and then you have leftover loose skin. Where you either need an operation or something, but you're talking about super obese. 50 pounds isn't going to do that. That's the people that are hundreds of pounds, you know, hugely obese.
Do you have any patients that are hugely obese, and what kind of impact does it have on them, GLP-1s?
All the ones that I saw have told me, because they were taking it before they came in here, that it worked well. I haven't had anybody say, I stopped it didn't work.
Wow.
I'm sure there are some, but I haven't had anybody who came in here. And I'd say I see at least 3, 4, 5 people a week that are on it.
So it's prevalent.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's working. As we look at its impact on our nation and on Medicare and all of the, we're 2/3 of $1 trillion a year on diabetes.
It'll save money. Now, with our medical system, I'm sure we'll come up with some other way to piss it away, but it should save money at the outset.
Hugely, in all respects, I
guess. Yeah, the guy who's in charge now, Kennedy, is real big on obesity. And he likes the GLP-1 drugs.
So that's a pretty good indicator. And he's pretty leery of a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
If he's for the GLP-1s, that's a pretty good indication.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about, for lack of a better word, his politics, but just overall, he tried to change, or I think he did change the food pyramid, putting more protein in it and healthy.
Essentially,
diet.
He's talking about the same things you're talking about.
Yeah.
Just stop eating all the sugar.
Yep, period. Sugar and carbohydrates.
Yeah, and which is sugar. So,
so
get rid of the sugar in your diet and you'll be on the road here.
If you get rid of all the sugar in your diet, you're still taking in a lot of sugar because it's in everything.
It's in everything. So it must have had a good impact on your business as a trichologist, the GLP-1s, because they do, the use of GLP-1s does have an impact on hair.
Well, the way it helped, I think, is people are doing the GLP-1 drugs, and it's not a quiet little rumor. It's fairly well known that it can cause hair loss. And they don't want to get a hair transplant. And since I do stem cells, it's much less invasive. So I think that has helped bring more clients to me.
Well, you have a graduate degree. You're a doctor of nutritional medicine. How do you, of natural medicines too, natural foods, do you see this GLP-1 as an unnatural food?
Well, it's not natural, but it's not a food. It's an appetite suppressant.
Okay.
And if we had self-control, which we don't, then I would say, yeah, you know, why do you have to take something unnatural to force yourself to not be hungry? Which sounds great in theory, but we have no self-control. And you know that commercial, I forgot what it's for. I bet you can't eat just one. It's true in America. We don't have self-control. Now, why are we the biggest drug-consuming nation, illegal drug-consuming nation in the world?
Because
It's
we can.
not, it's because we can.
No. And we have no governors to say we can't. And thus, when you walk down the streets of America, you see half the people overweight. And half the people are susceptible to diabetes, which is a very expensive disease, both in terms of your body and in terms of your pocketbook, and in terms of the nation's pocketbook as well. So, darn, it looks like these GLP-1s are a good thing.
They are a good thing. You know, the bottom line is we haven't seen any real negative effects from the GLP-1 drugs, but it would have to be pretty bad to outweigh obesity and diabetes. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Well, and then there's all kinds of new research being put on the table that, you do a quick scan of the medical impacts, and you see things like, well, it might be a good biological extender, which is to say it might help your body live longer.
Well, I don't know the scientific reason, but in general, if you keep your weight down, you live longer.
Simple as that.
You know, now there's all the fancy stuff with the telomeres and the things that, you could have a whole nother program on, but I don't know if it affects any of that. But I just know that if you keep your weight down, pretty much any doctor will tell you in general that'll make you live longer.
Whose is in most danger with respect to obesity? Is there a gender difference between men and women, between ages? Who's most vulnerable?
No, well, the children tend to run around more, so you don't see it as much, but childhood obesity is going up too. As a matter of fact, you would be surprised, but the average age of my clients is under 40.
Wow.
And you would think it was way older. Today, I just had a client, he was 23. Came in with his mom, but still, he was 23 and he got his first treatment today.
For
So they're coming in younger and younger.
treatment for what?
Hair loss.
23. Wow. Was that an impact of the GLP-1s?
No, was it the impact of the GLP-1s? It was in his case, it was probably, because of heredity, so he
Okay.
was more susceptible to the DHT, but still, it was very noticeable on him.
Wow. Well, this is a very interesting subject of trichology. There's hope for people without hair.
Yes, especially if they have hair follicles and it's just super thin. That's, I don't want to say easy, but that I make the claim I could increase the hair 100% of the time when they're shiny, bald, and the hair follicles are totally dormant. Then I can only do it 50, maybe 60% of the time. And I tell them that, like I said, up front.
Yeah. And how do you do that
How do
briefly?
I tell them?
How do you get hair to grow again?
Oh, I use stem cells.
You just
I
rub
actually
them.
inject stem cells into the hair so it goes to the hair follicles. I decide how many treatments after looking at the hair with a microscope in front of them. They could see it on a screen, and they either get two treatments, three treatments, or five treatments. And as long as I have something to work with, meaning hair follicles, I always grow the hair. Once in a blue moon, I have to give an extra treatment because something in their body is making them react slower. But that's part of what we call the regen therapeutic promise. But I know as long as there's hair follicles there, I could grow the hair and I could keep it there as long as they use the DHT blockers.
And the DHT blockers.
You know.
Well, And what are the DHT blockers again?
DHT is dihydrotestosterone. So the body converts testosterone through an enzyme called reductase to dihydrotestosterone. And the dihydrotestosterone binds to the hair and shrinks it. And the way it does that is we're all born with about 100,000 hair follicles. Each one give out five hairs. So when we have a full head of hair, we have 500,000 hairs. When the DHT binds to the hair, it starts giving out four hairs instead of five, and then three, all the way down to zero. And that they call it miniaturization, or I call it shrinkage. And that's where you lose it. And we're all susceptible at to some degree to DHT, but things like heredity, stress,
There you go.
will make you more susceptible. It makes the hair less resilient.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much, Dr. Eric. Or Dr. Keith Cantor, who is a trichologist and also knows a lot about GLP-1s and has let us know that, by golly, it seems to be a good thing. Can't see anything that outweighs its goodness. Is that a good statement, Doctor?
Yep, that's a very good statement.
All
Very
right.
true.
Thank you, Doctor, for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What on the Food Chain.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.